Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Welcome to day 198. We are in the book of Isaiah, chapters 20, 21, 22, and 23. This is the end of the section that we would organize as Oracles Against the Nations. Remember, this started in chapter 13. We're ending our reading today in chapter 23. So you've been awesome. You've made a trek through all the oracles of the nations. If you haven't done today's reading, go ahead, stop the video, stop the audio, go do the day's reading. You only got four short chapters and really like fun chapters to read. I mean, Isaiah's going to get naked and everything. It's going to be great. I used to say naked when I lived in Boston. Then I moved to North Carolina. I started saying naked, you know? So it's my southernness. So we got Isaiah getting naked today. We got a lot of awesome things happening in the book of Isaiah. It's going to be grand. And so, hey, if you've done the reading, let's dive in. Like always, I'm going to give you context clues. Then I'm going to give you some nerdy nuggets. I got a good amount of them for you today. And then we'll always leave with a timeless truth. Let's dive in to some context. Chapter 20 immediately starts with context, okay? In the year that the supreme commander sent by Sargon, king of Assyria, came to Ashdod and attacked and captured it. At that time, the Lord spoke through Isaiah, son of Amoz. Okay, so we get immediate context, and this is 711 BC. Okay, 711 BC. Okay, in the year that the supreme commander sent by Sargon, okay, Sargon is an Assyrian king of Assyria. I said it before the Bible could say it. Sorry. I was trying to give you context, but the Bible's already giving you context. Came to Ashdod. Now, where's Ashdod? Ashdod is a Philistine city. Ashdod, a Philistine city, so the Philistia is a small kingdom, is scared of the big bad Assyrians that are going to come and attack it. And so they try to ally up with Egypt. Okay, so they're going to form an alliance with Egypt. They're going to become vassals of Egypt because Egypt is a powerful, strong, large nation. And Ashdod, one of the capital cities of Philistia, is still going to fall to the Assyrians, even though they tried to ally themselves with another big, bad, powerful nation called Egypt. The big, bad, powerful nation called Assyria is still going to take them into captivity. And Isaiah has some really, really, really tough news, a tough pill to swallow. He's like, in the same way that Egypt failed the Philistines, Egypt will fail us. We are going to get led naked and barefoot off into captivity. Now, I want to help us like realize, like Isaiah ain't popular, okay? Like no one wants to come to church on Sunday and hear this. No one's trying to hear, yeah, man, God's pissed. He's had enough. He's going to lead you naked and barefoot out to Babylon. Like no one's trying to hear that. And so Isaiah is not popular in his lifetime. Neither is Jeremiah going to be popular. Most of the prophets are not popular. Like if you're trying to be popular, like if you're trying to be a televangelist, like don't be a prophet, okay? Because the prophets just don't have anything. They're not saying what Jeremiah will call itching ears want to hear. And so I want to put this in context because Isaiah is prophesying during a historical time like wealth and security. So for Isaiah to be walking around saying, yep, God's going to lead us out into captivity naked and barefoot. Everyone's looking around like, bruh, that is just not in line with what any economists are saying that it's fine. We've been dealing with the Assyrians for a long time. We know how to form alliances with Egypt. Like, it's going to be okay. But Isaiah's like, no, it's not going to be okay. Okay. So that's the context. Okay. I want to give you that just like historical context that maybe you're reading this and you're going, The writing's on the wall. Dude, Assyria just came and attacked. Your neighbor, like the Philistines, why wouldn't you think that Assyria is going to come attack you? Well, the Assyrians had been on the doorstep of the kingdom of Judah for a long time. And under Ahaz, again, we have to remember, there are a lot of kings who are going to be famous, Israelite kings that are going to be famous outside the Bible, but in the Bible, they're not famous. Because what God thinks is respectable and what the world thinks is respectable is totally different. So Ahaz is actually known as a king that brings great wealth and stability to the nation, the kingdom of Judah. But to God, it's like, yeah, but you sacrificed your kids and you worshiped foreign gods. So you don't exist to me. Like, you're nothing to me, okay? And obviously, I'm speaking in hyperbole for those of you who did not catch that. But in outside of the Bible, it's very clear that a king like Ahaz is going to bring record growth to the kingdom of Judah. But for God, that's not the stuff that impresses God. So in the middle of wealth and in the middle of stability, God tells Isaiah, okay, here we go. Take off the sackcloth from your body and the sandals from your feet. And he did so, going around stripped and barefoot. Verse 3, then the Lord said, just as my servant Isaiah has gone stripped and barefoot for 3 years, golly, bruh, as a sign and portent against Egypt and Cush, so the king of Assyria will lead away, stripped and barefoot, the Egyptian captives in Cushite exiles. Now, I want to remind you, Cushite is black people, okay? Cushite exiles, young and old, with buttocks bare to Egypt's shame. So we got black butt cheeks right here in the Bible. We got Cushite buttocks bared. Okay. We got Mike Tyson about to fight Jake Paul right here in Isaiah chapter 20. Okay. Now, nerdy nuggets. Let's get to some nerdy nuggets now that we've had our Mike Tyson's butt cheeks in all of our minds. Let's go. First nerdy nugget. I'm going to give you a nerdy nugget from chapter 21 and then from chapter 22, and I may have one for chapter 23 as well. All right. By the way, here's something that you need to, here's a nerdy nugget for Isaiah chapter 20, actually. So let's do 20, 21, 22. I'll give you three nerdy nuggets today. First nerdy nugget from chapter 20 is that the prophets are not just speaking or prophesying, but their message is also embodied in their life, their lifestyle, and sign acts, okay? So Ezekiel is going to have to lay on one side of his body for a certain days and the other side of his body for a certain number of days. So the action is the prophecy. What Isaiah names his children, he's naming his children based on a prophetic word that God is given to the nation, not given him personally, but given to the nation. Hosea is probably the biggest example of a prophet having to live out a lifestyle based on the prophetic word. So the prophetic word to Israel is that God is a faithful husband, even when Israel is an unfaithful bride. And so Hosea is going to marry a woman who's going to be adulterous and has to love her and then rescue her and redeem her. And so Isaiah is stripped or naked and barefoot for 3 years. And his life is the message, okay? It's not just that his words are the message, but his life is the message. His life is a billboard. Man, that's almost a timeless truth for all of us, that it's not just our words that are the message, but our life is the message. And a lot of times people, they'll hear what you have to say, but really they're looking at your life. They're looking at the fruit of your life to see whether or not Jesus is someone that they should be following. So, next nerdy nugget number two comes from chapter 21. I had to pull out my NRSV today because the NIV is going to tell us when chapter 21 starts. This is a prophecy against the desert by the sea. That's what the NIV says, but the NIV is not translating this well. The NRSV says the oracle concerning the wilderness of the sea. The ESV follows suit with saying the wilderness of the sea. This is a prophecy against Babylon. Now, it's strange that Babylon is being called the wilderness of the sea, because wilderness and sea are both chaos words throughout the Bible. Both of these images, the wilderness is not a place of order, it's a place of chaos. The sea is not a place of order, it's a place of chaos. And Babylon prided itself on its order. Okay, if you go to Babylon, you're going to see gardens. If you actually type in like hanging gardens or like the gardens of Babylon, okay, the gardens of Babylon would have been one of the ancient wonders of the world. So this is a city known for its glory, great ordered wall, massive ziggurats, legendary gardens surrounding the life-giving waters of the Euphrates. Okay, the Euphrates River is the thing that has produced all of this life. And remember when you were in school, you read about the Fertile Crescent, okay? And this area of the world was fertile because of the Tigris, the Euphrates, the Nile, these rivers. So Babylon prided itself on order. When the Tower of Babel, when they're trying to build a tower, that's actually a ziggurat. Okay, so if you've been listening to episodes for a long time, you're familiar with what a ziggurat is. Is what Jacob saw in his dream. A ziggurat, which was an ancient temple, it's an ancient temple that looks like it has a stairs on it. So Babylon is known for what I would call man-made order. And remember, the Genesis account is an account not of God creating something out of nothing. That's how modern readers would read it. But it was actually an account of God creating order out of chaos. Babylon, which is the capital of the Babylonian Empire, the city of Babylon is seen as the bastion for human order. Whether that order be found in laws, whether that order be found in the military, whether that order be found in ziggurats or gardens, Babylon is known for order. But man-made order will become chaos when God is not involved. Although Babylon is known for order, what does God say? God calls it a wilderness of the sea. So the oracle starts by God calling a place known for order a wilderness of the sea. And unless you know how to interpret the symbols of the Bible, then you don't really know what the Bible is saying. And what the Bible is saying is that even your best attempt at order is still chaos because you don't have me. And so that's the whole oracle starts out with wilderness of the sea. This term, wilderness of the sea, reflects in some way the formless and void picture of the world without God's order in the beginning of Genesis. Babylon, which prided itself over its great city, would become the opposite of what it believed it was. Okay, so we got two nerdy nuggets already. Next nerdy nugget. This section of Isaiah is full of language that's going to find itself in the book of Revelation. These oracles contain many lines and images that will later be used by John in his apocalypse. Lines such as fallen is Babylon, which is chapter 21, verse 9. That is going to find itself in Revelation chapter 18, verse 2, or the image of Tyre, which is one of the capital cities of the Phoenician Empire, prostituting herself with the nations. This imagery will be used by John when he declares judgment on both Babylon and Tyre, on the Babylon and Tyre of his own day, which is Rome or the Roman Empire. This one is really, really cool. And you got to be really nerdy to nerd out on this one. This is from chapter 22, okay? There's this little confrontation between Isaiah and Hezekiah's steward named Shebna. And in the grand scheme of things, this is like not that fascinating. But in terms of archaeology, this is really, really, really fascinating. So actually, let's just go ahead and read chapter 22, verse 15. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Say to this steward, to Shebna, the palace administrator, what are you doing here and who gave you permission to cut out a grave for yourself here, hewing your grave on the height and chiseling your resting place in the rock? Beware, the Lord is about to take firm hold of you and hurl you away, you mighty man. He will roll you up tightly like a ball and throw you into a large country. There you will die, and there the chariots you were so proud of will become a disgrace to your master's house. I will depose you from your office and you will be ousted by your position. There's this guy, this random dude. His name is Shebna, okay? He's the palace administrator and he's trying to get a grave site for himself with Hezekiah. And this seems like just something that is not even that important. The implication of this confrontation that we have in the book of Isaiah is that Shebna would lose his position and probably be in that tomb sooner than he hoped. What's remarkable is that if you were to wander into the British Museum today, go upstairs to the Levant section, and then go to room 57 and look to the left of the door into room 56, you would see a piece of stone on the wall, specifically a lintel stone of an ancient tomb, a tomb discovered in 1870 near Siloam, a tombstone with an ancient Hebrew inscription on it, identifying its owner as Shebaniah, the royal steward of King Hezekiah. The very tomb Isaiah spoke of is there in London, in a room that anyone can go into for free and look at, because the stuff that happened in the Bible is actually historically accurate. And that's just really, really cool. I know that's like the nerdiest of the nerdiest of nuggets. And the really, really cool thing is that when I lived in England, and Andy Thomas was teaching me how to study the Bible this way, color coding my Bible and looking at context. When Andy Thomas was teaching me how to do this, he took me to the British Museum and showed me all this nerdy stuff. And so, number one, we love Andy. And number two, I love Andy for showing me all the nerdy stuff in the British Museum. All right, Thomas Truth. There's a big message in these chapters, which is to not trust in Egypt, okay? Ashdod is going to trust in Egypt and the Assyrians are still going to prevail. Now, like I said yesterday, there's actually a massive Christian population in Egypt today. So what God is not saying is don't trust Egyptian people. That's not the message. For the people of Israel, Egypt represented the bondage of their past. And that is a timeless truth. To not go back to the bondage of the past. Man, the Bible says this, like a dog returns to his vomit, a fool returns to his folly. I can remember like being free from certain things in my life, only wanting to go back to the things that God had actually freed me from. And so the timeless truth is that for you, Egypt does not represent the people of Egypt today. It actually represents maybe a relationship that God rescued you out of. There's so many times where I talk to people who want to go date their ex. And I'm like, wait. God rescued you from this relationship. And I've been there. Trust me. I've been there where there was a toxic, dysfunctional relationship and God finally delivered me. But then you get lonely and you start questioning, did I make the right decision? And man, if you're in just a circumstance, I remember for me, I had left a job in North Carolina at a church. And while I was on the road being an itinerant speaker, COVID happened. And my pastor called me and said, do you want to get your job back? And I just remember hearing the Lord say, you can't go backwards. You can't go backwards. I'm the God that wants to bring you forward. I'm not trying to bring you back. Now, there are certain areas of our life where we need to go back to like make amends or to reconcile or to make things right. Maybe make some mistakes that went wrong, make those things right. So there are certain areas where we need to go back to fix things. But I knew that season was over. I was not supposed to go back on staff at that church. And I'm not saying that church was bondage. I'm just saying that it represented something from my past that God wanted to continue a forward progression, a forward movement. And so one of the big themes that we're going to get in these chapters is that, man, Israel's just not supposed to go back. They're not supposed to trust in the Egyptians. They're not supposed to trust in Egypt. And what that represents is going back to old institutions, old relationships, old habits, old sin, old things that kept you bound. And God's not telling you to go back. But, and maybe here's the most succinct way I can say it. Sometimes those things that are consistent and predictable are not always safe or secure. Sometimes the human mind has a way of conflating safe and secure with predictable and consistent. And I've had so many things in my life where it was consistent, it was predictable, but that doesn't mean it's safe or secure. We can't define safety and security based on whether or not something's consistent or predictable. I know women personally that have a real hard time leaving a man who's abusing them because that man offers consistency and predictability, but that man is not safe and that man is not secure. So maybe there's something in your life right now and it represents consistency and predictability, and God's trying to put it in your rearview mirror. He wants it to be in your past. And there's a temptation to go back to the past. And God is saying, please, 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 just keep moving forward. Move forward out of whatever it is that I have delivered you from. All right. That's our Thomas Truth for the day. Tomorrow we got day 199. We're going to be in Isaiah chapter 24 to 27. And this is an apocalyptic section of the book of Isaiah. It's going to be really fun. I can't wait to get into it with you. I'm so proud of you, especially if you're on a streak. I'll see you right here tomorrow. Love you guys. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.